chorou incompleto.
Mas pode dar.
Mas não ser dedo, mas que evitar. Nome de guerra, mas evitar.
Welcome to the Voices from the Frontline segment of the 4 o'clock Public Affairs Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and streaming on the web for the world at kpfk.org. My name is Damon Azali Rojas, and I'm here to host Voices from the Frontlines today. On our first segment, we will be talking about how Bill Clinton's effective Death Penalty Act and Bush's Patriot Act all come together in a mix that gives the Attorney General the ability to allow states to fast-track state executions. To discuss this, we'll be joined by Carmen Hernandez, the President of the National Association for Criminal Defense Lawyers. And for our second segment, last Monday, the L.A. County Board of Supervisors voted officially to shut down King Drew Medical Center, concluding almost 2 years of efforts to save the hospital following the closure of the trauma center in November. Joining us will be a pair of Aubreys, Larry Aubrey, longtime community activist in Los Angeles, and his daughter, Erin Aubrey Kaplan, who is a writer and contributing editor for the Los Angeles Times. And for our final segment, we'll bring it closer to northern South Central Los Angeles. We're going to be joined with Michael Novick, and potentially actually one of the black writers. The Black Rider Liberation Party suffered 2 police raids, and 6 of their members were arrested on Friday. So we'll be talking to them. So we'll be right back with Carmen Hernandez. Welcome back. On the phone, we have Carmen Hernandez, who's the president of the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. Carmen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Great. So I think this kind of comes in a context, and I think a couple of laws have happened beforehand that I want to talk about to that kind of give the background to this. First was President Bill Clinton's Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act, adopted in 1996.
A terrible piece of legislation.
So, what, Carmen, what did it do?
Among other things, and one of the first things it did, it introduced a statute of limitations into what we call habeas litigation. Habeas is the great writ of habeas corpus. It's always traditionally, I think since the Magna Carta, allowed prisoners to challenge their imprisonment, their sentence, their conviction, and in death penalty cases, obviously the death sentence.
And that's mostly procedural, or is it actually bringing in new evidence?
It can be, you can bring in new evidence.
Okay.
You can challenge the entirety, and the basis for the challenge has to be a violation of the Constitution or laws of the United States.
Okay.
And quite often, and traditionally, I mean, historically, and I'm talking about historically before the United States was even became a nation, it was understood to mean this was the last method by which someone could challenge an injustice.
Right. And so,
and Clinton's AEDPA, as we refer to it, put a 1-year statute of limitations. That is, you have 1 year from the final, from when your conviction becomes final. It's a year from when, say, the highest court of the state, let's talk about California, the highest court of the state decides that your case is affirmed, that there are no more challenges you can make.
And what was the time limit before?
There was no time limit. As I say, it was known as the great writ of habeas corpus. Mm-hmm. And the theory was that at any time you could say to a court, I'm imprisoned as a result of a violation of the Constitution of the United States.
Okay.
Something was done wrong in my case. Some evidence was withheld. Some evidence was suppressed that shouldn't have been. My lawyer was ineffective. My lawyer slept through my trial. A witness has now come forth that proves, or, you know, there's new science that says it could not have been me. As you know, there have been at least 124 people who've been released from death row based on DNA evidence, where years later DNA evidence comes out and proves that the person that the defendant is not the person who committed the act.
And this was, I mean, the whole thing, this was Bill Clinton, who's a Democrat, who, generally speaking, in the mass media circles, a more liberal, more caring, et cetera, but this was his kind of push that actually limited people's ability to prove themselves innocent.
Right, and of course it was passed by the Congress, which was, I believe, a Republican Congress at the time. And it may be because he comes from a state. A lot of state administrators don't like the notion that a defendant sentenced in a state system can, after the fact, go to a federal court and say, you know, I'm in prison, my constitutional rights were violated.
Which sounds very reminiscent of a states' rights argument, saying that the federal government can't come in and tell us what we can or can't do.
Right. And, you know, you hear cases years later, but of course, particularly in death penalty cases, you ought to be able to, until a minute before they pull the switch, be able to say, look, here's concrete evidence that something was wrong, that I'm not the person who should have been, you know, I'm innocent, for example.
So, Carmen, before we even get to the Patriot Act piece of this, what did the Effective Death Penalty Act do? What did it mean for prisoners, for lawyers, for anti-death penalty advocates?
It put this one-year statute of limitations, which is horrific for many reasons also. It's an intricate piece of legislation. There are very arcane and archaic rules as to when, what you can challenge, when you can do, what you have to do, whether it was preserved, whether the error was preserved in the state system, whether you waived your right to do it, whether all sorts of real, as I say, arcane rules and regulations. And what has happened as a result is a lot of people have been precluded from challenging their conviction.
So just meaning it's too late, too bad.
Too late, too bad. Mm-hmm. You forgot. Your lawyer didn't raise it right. You had a hearing in the state court, and therefore we have to accept those decisions, even though your lawyer didn't do a good job, or maybe you never had a lawyer. I mean, that's the problem. Sometimes you're not entitled to an attorney on post-conviction.
So, yeah, explain that to us, because I understand that at a state level, you are required to actually have counsel, even if they're falling asleep or whatnot. But once you appeal it, then there's a difference.
Right, at the trial level, not just state, federal or state, at the trial level, the Constitution, as the Supreme Court has interpreted it, gives you the right to an attorney. Be that person competent or incompetent, you're entitled to an attorney as a variety. If you don't have the money to hire an attorney, one will be appointed for you. And you're also entitled to an attorney on direct appeal. After that, you're not entitled to an attorney. So say you get convicted, and now you're sitting in jail and you know you're innocent, or, you know, you were convicted but there were huge errors made in your case. Perhaps, you know, the fact that you are mentally retarded wasn't brought out, so that the jury never heard, or perhaps the jury never heard in a death penalty case, for example, that you were brutally abused as a child, or that you were sexually abused as a child, or what, any number of reasons. And that wasn't brought out on appeal for whatever reason. Now you know you don't have the right to have an attorney represent you on post-conviction matters, which is what a habeas corpus proceeding is.
So now,
and remember, we're dealing with a criminal justice system, which we all know is flawed. How do we know it's flawed? I mean, every day we get new evidence that the system is flawed. For one, as I said, there have been 124 people released from death row because DNA evidence has proved them to be innocent. And not every case has DNA evidence, so there are many people who could be innocent, but because you don't have DNA, you can't prove it. We know it's flawed because, I think you're coming from California, so I'm mentioning California.
Yeah, great.
Just a few years ago, you had the L.A. Ramparts scandal, where cops were admitted to be planting evidence on people. That happens across the country, unfortunately, more often than we'd like to know.
When I was researching the Rampart scandal, there was actually a person who was handcuffed, shot by police officers, unhandcuffed. The gun was planted on them, and they got 23 years, and it wasn't until the Rampart scandal came out that they got out. That they already served 2 years and were paralyzed. So I think that's very clear. I think the other piece is just in terms of just who is actually in prison. So it's, you know, the the statistics are between 2.2 and 2.3 million people are in prisons and jails in the U.S., and something like 900,000 of them are black.
Right.
So.
Many of them are poor, and you know, another portion of them are Latino, which isn't to say that, you know, the remedy should not be that we've now put in a lot of rich white people in jail. That's not the remedy. It doesn't, you know, two wrongs don't make a right.
Yeah, I would say the remedy is decriminalize a lot of the laws that have been made that are just trying to spur along the growth of the prison system. But not to get off on that, what I wanted to talk to you about...
We'll talk about that some other time.
Yeah, because I just wanted to kind of make the connection, because how did the U.S. Patriot Act then change... Okay. What Clinton's act did?
Well, one of the things the AEDPA Act said is you've got a year statute of limitations for filing this. But if you are a state that meets certain requirements, and those requirements involve, you know, you give competent counsel to death row inmates to be able to challenge their convictions and these post-convictions, then instead of having a year, you have the state can say, 6 months as a statute.
And you mean the competent counsel is meaning that they, you know, pass the trial part of the...
In the post-conviction. In the challenge of post-conviction, that you're entitled to a counsel and that the state is providing sufficient resources for those counsel to be able to challenge these cases. But 6 months, you know, in a death penalty case is woefully short.
From what I understand, is actually you have to the people would actually have to file papers for two separate trials or pieces of the trial at the same time.
Right,
because there's not enough time.
Well, that's a recent rule that came out that the Supreme Court decided that you've got to be filing in the federal system. You can't wait until the entirety of your state procedure is finished before you have to start filing another document. But, I mean, 6 months means you an attorney, say me, coming into a case brand new, has to read a transcript of a trial, has to meet with the client, has to investigate the case, research the issues, and prepare the documents all in 6 months. That, if I had nothing else to do and I picked up a brand new death penalty case, first of all, I will tell you, I don't do death penalty because... I'm not competent to do death penalty, let me put it that way, because I've never done death penalty. Not that I'm not a competent attorney, it's just it's like being a brain surgeon versus a family doctor or a heart surgeon versus obstetrician. You know, there are certain specialties. So if a lawyer picked up a case immediately today and started researching, 6 months is a very short time to have to file a document that's the last possible document you can file. And now these rules that are coming into play say that the Attorney General, not the courts, get to decide what states are properly funding these post-conviction lawyers to reduce the statute of limitations from a year to 6 months. And let me put it this way. I'm a Yankee fan. You're in L.A. And now these rules would say that the Attorney General, in this case, Mr. Gonzalez, would have to decide whether any state is providing competent counsel. Here's the way to view it. It's as if George Steinbrenner were to decide whether the Dodger pitchers... It's as if George Steinbrenner would be calling balls and strikes in the World Series instead of having the umpire do it.
Wow.
So instead of having the courts decide whether the prosecution, whether a particular state is giving competent counsel, we're going to bring in the Attorney General, who's the chief prosecutor in the United States, to decide.
Whose job is to prosecute.
Exactly.
Right.
And that's not even looking at this particular Attorney General. Let's say any Attorney General. Let's say the most wonderful Attorney General that you could come up with. Not this Attorney General whom this Congress is saying on both sides of the aisle that he's been less than honest in his testimony before them. This particular Attorney General is someone who has a history as in Texas of having reviewed petitions, you know, death penalty commutation petitions, and never once finding a single case where the death penalty should not be applied.
So, Carmen, we have about 2 minutes left, and I wanted to get to two quick things. The first being kind of like, this points to a larger role in terms of Patriarch, Bush, Gonzalez. If you can spend like a minute on that. And then I think the last part, just trying to see if people wanted to get more information, if people wanted to do something about this, what would they do?
Okay, the first thing about this administration is that more so than any administration, it is giving unto itself the role of, you know, judge, jury, and executioner. As I say, at a minimum, if we had the courts deciding, as that's the way it was originally written, then at least you have the chance that there's an independent arbiter deciding. Not George Steinbrenner, but an umpire. Now, with respect to whether people want to do something, I think particularly in California or any other state, write to your governor, write to your attorney general and say, you know, it's not fair, it's not just. Don't accept this 6-month statute of limitations. Don't seek it, even if the attorney general gives it to you. And for more information, you can go on our website, www.nacdl.org, or you can do a search. There are a number of death penalty websites throughout the country that you can find a lot of information.
Yeah, you guys can check out Death Penalty Focus. Also, there was an article in the LA Times.
Right.
It was by Edwin Chemerinsky.
Edward Chemerinsky, who's a law professor, wrote a very, very good
It's a very short, concise, but to the point needs to happen.
Right, in which he, you know, appeals to Governor Brown not to accept the 6-month limitation.
Great. So, Carmen, we'll have to have you back on when we have the roundtable on the criminal justice system in the United States.
Please do, because, you know, we really need to reduce these sentences and free some of the people that are sitting in jail.
All right on. So we were just speaking to Carmen Hernandez. This is Damon Azali Rojas. We're Voices from the Front Lines on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and we're going to be right back talking about Martin Luther King Center Hospital with Aaron Aubrey and Larry Aubrey. We'll be right back in a moment.